Chapter 17. Prax. In the cinema and games that formed the basis of Prax's understanding of how people of violence interacted, the cocking of a gun was less a threat than a kind of punctuation mark. A security agent questioning someone might begin with threats and slaps, but when he cocked his gun, that meant it was time to take him seriously. It wasn't something Prax had considered any more carefully than which urinal to use when he wasn't the only one in the men's room, or how to step on and off a transport tube. It was the untaught etiquette of received wisdom. You yelled, you threatened, you cocked your gun. And then people talked. "Where's my little girl?" he yelled. He cocked his pistol. The reaction was almost immediate. A sharp, stuttering report like a high-pressure valve failing, but much louder. He danced back, almost dropping the pistol. Had he fired it by mistake? But no, his finger hadn't touched the trigger. The air smelled sharp, acidic. The woman with the pizza was gone. No, not gone. She was on the ground. Something terrible had happened to her jaw. As he watched, her ruined mouth moved, as though she was trying to speak. Prax could hear only a high-pitched squeal. He wondered if his eardrums had ruptured. The woman with the destroyed jaw took a long, shuddering breath, and then didn't take another. With a sense of detachment, he noticed that she'd drawn her pistol. It was still clutched in her hand. He wasn't sure when she had done that. The handset playing dance music transitioned to a different song that only faintly made it past the ringing in his ears. "I didn't shoot her," he said. His voice sounded like he was in partial vacuum, the air too thin to support the energy of sound waves. But he could breathe. He wondered again if the gunfire had ruptured his eardrums. He looked around. Everyone was gone. He was alone in the room. Or no, they were behind cover. It occurred to him that he should probably be behind cover too. Only nobody was firing, and he wasn't sure where to go. Holden's voice seemed to come from far away.
"Amos?
Yeah, Cap?
Would you please take his gun away now?
I'm on it."
Amos rose from behind one of the boxes nearest the wall. His Martian armor had a long, pale streak across the chest and two white circles just below the ribs. Amos limped toward him.
"Sorry, Doc," he said. "Giving it to you was my bad call. Maybe next time, right?"
Prax looked at the big man's open hand, then carefully put the gun in it.
"Wendell?" Holden said.
Prax still wasn't sure where he was, but he sounded closer. That was probably just Prax's hearing coming back. The acrid smell in the air changed to something more coppery. It made him think of compost heaps gone sour, warm and organic and unsettling.
"One down," Wendell said.
"We'll get a medic," Holden said.
"Nice thought, but no point," Wendell said. "Finish the mission. We got most of them, but two or three made it through the door. They'll raise an alarm."
One of the Pinkwater soldiers stood up. Blood was running down his left arm. Another lay on the floor, half of his head simply gone. Holden appeared. He was massaging his right elbow, and the armor showed a new scar at his left temple. "What happened?" Prax asked.
"You started a gunfight," Holden said. "Okay, let's move ahead before they can set up defenses."
Prax started noticing other bodies. Men and women who had been eating pizza and listening to music. They'd had pistols, but Holden's people carried automatic shotguns and assault rifles, and some had military-looking armor. The difference in outcome hadn't been subtle.
"Amos, take point," Holden said,
and the big man moved through the doorway and into the unknown. Prax moved to follow, and the head of the Pinkwater people took his elbow.
"Why don't you stay with me, Professor?" he said.
"Yes, I'll... all right."
On the other side of the door, the nature of the rooms changed. They were still clearly in the old tunnels of Ganymede. The walls still had their webwork of mineralized frost, the lighting was still old-fashioned LED housings, and the gray walls showed where ice had melted and refrozen during some climate system glitch years or decades before. But walking through that doorway was walking from the land of the dead into something living. The air was warmer. It smelled of bodies and fresh soil and the subtle, sharp scent of phenol disinfectant. The wide hall they entered could have been the common room in any of a dozen labs where Prax had worked. Three metal office doors were closed along the far wall, and a rolling metal freight gateway hung open ahead of them. Amos and Holden went to the three closed doors, Amos kicking each in turn. When the third flew open, Holden shouted something, but the words were lost in the bark of a pistol and Amos's return shotgun fire. The two remaining Pinkwater soldiers, who weren't Wendell, scuttled forward, pressing their backs to the wall on either side of the freight gateway. Prax started toward them, but Wendell put a restraining hand on his shoulder. The man on the left side of the door ducked his head into the doorway and then out again. A bullet gouged a streak in the wall where it missed him.
"What can you give me?"
Holden asked, and for a moment Prax thought he was talking to them. Holden's eyes were hard, and the scowl seemed etched into his skin. Then Naomi said something to make him smile, and he only looked tired and sad.
"All right, we've got a partial floor plan. Through there, we've got an open room. It drops down about 2 meters with exits to our 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock. It's built like a pit, so if they're setting up defense here, we've got the high ground."
"Makes it a damn stupid place to set up a defense, then," Wendell said.
Gunfire chattered, three small holes appearing in the metal of the freight gateway. The people on the other side were nervous.
"And yet the evidence suggests," Holden said.
"You want to talk to him, Cap?" Amos said. "Or do we head straight for the obvious thing?"
The question meant something more than Prax understood. He could tell that much. Holden started to say something, hesitated, and then nodded toward the doorway.
"Let's get this done," he said.
Holden and Amos jogged toward the gateway, Prax and Wendell close behind. Someone was shouting orders in the room beyond. Prax made out the words payload and evac, his heart going tight. Evac. They couldn't let anyone leave until they found May.
"I counted 7, one of the Pinkwater soldiers said. "Could be more."
"Any kids?" Amos asked.
"Didn't see any."
"We should probably look again," Amos said, and leaned out the door.
Prax caught his breath, expecting to see the man's head dissolve in a rain of bullets, but Amos was already pulling back when the first shot started.
"What are we working with?" Holden asked.
"More'n 7, Amos said. "They're using this as a choke point, but the fella's right. Either they don't know what they're doing, or there's something in there they can't pull back from.
So either panicking amateurs or something critical to defend," Holden said.
A metal canister the size of a fist rolled through the gateway, clanking. Amos picked the grenade up casually and tossed it back through the doorway. The detonation lit the room, the report louder than anything Prax had ever heard before. The ringing in his ears redoubled.
"Could be both,"
Amos shouted conversationally from very far away. In the next room, something shattered. People were screaming. Prax imagined technicians like the ones from the previous room, shredded by shrapnel from their own grenade. One of the Pinkwater soldiers leaned out, peering into the haze of smoke. An assault rifle blatted and he pulled back, clutching his belly. Blood poured between his fingers. Wendell pushed past Prax, kneeling by his fallen soldier.
"Sorry, sir," the Pinkwater man said. "Got careless. Leave me here and I'll guard the rear as long as I can."
"Captain Holden," Wendell said, "if we're going to do something, we're better off doing it soon."
The screaming in the other room got louder. Someone was roaring inhumanly. Prax wondered if they'd had livestock in there. The bellowing sounded almost like an injured bull. He had to fight the urge to put his hands over his ears. Something loud happened. Holden nodded.
Amos, soften them up, then let's head in.
Aye, aye, Cap, Amos said, putting down his shotgun.
He took two grenades of his own, pulled the pink plastic strip pins, rolled the live grenades through the gateway, and scooped his gun back up. The double detonation was deeper than the first one had been, but not as loud. Even before the echo faded, Amos, Holden, Wendell, and the one remaining soldier ducked through the gateway, weapons blazing. Prax hesitated. He was unarmed. The enemy was just beyond the threshold. He could stay here and tend to the gut-shot man. But the image that wouldn't leave him was Katoa's still body. The dead boy wasn't more than 100 meters away. And May... Keeping his head down, Prax scuttled through the doorway. Holden and Wendell were to his right, Amos and the other soldier to his left. All four were crouched, weapons at the ready. Smoke stung Prax's eyes and nostrils, and the air recyclers groaned in protest, fighting to clear the air.
Well now, Amos said. That's fucking queer.
The room was built on 2 levels. An upper catwalk, 1.5 meters wide, and a lower floor 2 meters below it. A wide passage led away at 10 o'clock on the lower level, and a door on the upper level stood open at 1 o'clock. The pit below them was chaos. Blood soaked the walls, and it sprayed up to stipple the ceiling. Bodies lay on the ground below them. A thin steam rose from the gore. They had been using equipment for cover. Prax recognized a microcentrifuge smashed almost out of its casing. Inch-thick slivers of ice or glass glittered among the carnage. A nitrogen bath was tipped on its side, the alarm indicator showing it had locked down. A massive blot array, easily 200 kilos, lay at an improbable angle, a child's toy thrown aside in the ecstasy of play.
What the hell kind of ordnance are you packing?
Wendell asked, his voice awed. From the wide passage at 10 o'clock came shrieks and the sound of gunfire.
I don't think this was us, Holden said. Come on, double time it.
They dropped down to the killing floor. A glass cube like the one they'd seen before stood in shattered glory. Blood made the floor slick underfoot. A hand still wrapping a pistol lay in the corner. Prax looked away. May was here. He couldn't lose focus, couldn't be sick. He kept going on. Holden and Amos led the way toward the sound of fighting. Prax trotted along behind them. When he tried to hold back, let Wendell and his compatriot go first, the Pinkwater men gently pushed him forward. They were guarding the rear, Prax realized, in case someone came up from behind. He should have thought of that. The passageway opened out, broad but low. Industrial loading mechs, amber indicators showing idle, stood beside pallets of foam-coated supply boxes. Amos and Holden moved down the hall with a practiced efficiency that left Prax winded. But with every turn they reached, every door they opened, he found himself willing them to go faster. She was here, and they had to find her, before she got hurt, before something happened. And with every body they found, the sick feeling that something had already happened sank deeper in his gut. They moved forward quickly, too quickly. When they reached the end of the line, an airlock 4 meters high and at least 7 across, Prax couldn't imagine there was anyone behind it. Amos let his automatic shotgun hang at his side as he tapped at the airlock controls. Holden squinted up at the ceiling as if something might be written there. The ground trembled and set the hidden base creaking.
Was that a launch? Holden said. That was a launch.
Yeah, Amos said. Looks like they've got a landing pad out there. Monitors aren't showing anything else on it, though. Whatever that was, it was the last train out of here.
Prax heard someone shouting. It took him only a second to realize it was him. Like he was watching his body move without him, he dashed the sealed metal doors, pounding them with his clenched fists. She was there. She was just out there, on the ship lifting away from Ganymede. He could feel her like she had a rope tied to his heart, and every moment pulled it out of him a little more. He blacked out for a second, or maybe longer. When he came back to himself, he was slung over Amos's wide shoulder, the armor biting into his belly. He pushed up to see the airlock receding slowly behind them.
"Put me down," Prax said.
"Can't do it," Amos replied. "Cap says..."
The stuttering of assault rifle fire came, and Amos dropped Prax to the ground and squatted over him, shotgun at the ready.
"What the fuck, Cap?" Amos said.
Prax glanced up in time to see the Pinkwater soldier cut down, blood spraying out of his back. Wendell was on the ground, returning fire around a sharp corner.
"Missed someone," Holden said. "Or else they called in their friends."
"Don't shoot them," Prax said. "What if it's May? What if they have her with them?"
"They don't, Doc," Amos said. "Stay down."
Holden was shouting, words rolling out of him too fast to follow. Prax didn't know if he was talking to Amos or Wendell or Naomi back on the ship, or him. It could have been any of them. All of them. Four men came around the corner, weapons in hand. They wore the same coveralls that all the others had worn. One had long black hair and a goatee. Another was a woman with skin the color of buttercream. The two in the middle could have been brothers. The same close-cut brown hair, the same long noses. From somewhere to Prax's right, the shotgun spoke twice. All four fell back. It was like something out of a prank comedy. Eight legs, swept at once. Four people Prax didn't know, had never met, just fell down. They just fell down. He knew they were never getting back up.
"Wendell?" Holden said. "Report?"
"Caudle's dead," Wendell said.
He didn't sound sad about it. He didn't sound like anything.
"I think I broke my wrist. Anyone know where they came from?"
"Nope,"
Holden said.
"Let's not assume they were alone, though."
They retraced their steps, back through the long, wide passages, past bodies of men and women they hadn't killed, but who were dead now anyway. Prax didn't try to keep from weeping. There was no point. If he could keep his legs moving, one foot in front of the other, it was enough. They reached the bloodied pit after a few minutes, or an hour, or a week. Prax couldn't tell, and all options seemed equally plausible. The ruptured bodies stank, the spilled blood thickening to a black currant jelly, the open viscera freeing colonies of bacteria usually held in check by the gut. On the catwalk, a woman stood. What was her name? Paula, that was it.
"Why aren't you at your post?"
Wendell snapped when he saw her. "Guthrie called for backup. Said he was gut-shot and about to pass out. I brought him some adrenaline and speed."
"Good call," Wendell said.
"Uchi and Caudle?"
"Didn't make it," Wendell said.
The woman nodded, but Prax saw something pass over her. Everyone here was losing someone. His tragedy was just one among dozens, hundreds, thousands. By the time the cascade had run all the way out, maybe millions. When death grew that large, it stopped meaning anything. He leaned against the nitrogen bath, his head in his hands. He'd been so close. So close. "We have to find that ship," he said.
"We have to drop back 10 and punt," Holden said. "We came here looking for a missing kid. Now we've got a covert scientific station halfway to being packed up and shipped out. And a secret landing pad, and whatever third player was fighting with these people while we were."
"Third player?" Paula asked. Wendell gestured to the carnage.
"Not us," he said.
We don't know what we're looking at, Holden said. And until we do, we need to back off.
We can't stop, Prax said. I can't stop. May is...
Probably dead, Wendell said. The girl's probably dead. And if she's not, she's alive someplace besides Ganymede. I'm sorry, Holden said.
The dead boy, Prax said. Katoa. His father took the family off Ganymede as soon as he could. Got them someplace safe. Someplace else.
Wise move, Holden said.
Prax looked to Amos for support, but the big man was poking through the wreckage, pointedly not taking either side.
The boy was alive, Prax said. Basha said he knew the boy was dead, and he packed up and he left. And when he got on that transport, his boy was here, in this lab, and he was alive. So don't tell me May's probably dead.
They were all silent for a moment.
Just don't, Prax said.
Cap, Amos said. Just a minute, Holden said. Prax, I'm not going to say that I know what you're going through, but I have people I love too. I can't tell you what to do, but let me ask you to look at what kind of strategy is going to be best for you and for May.
Cap, Amos said. Seriously, you should look at this.
Amos stood by the shattered glass cube. His shotgun hung forgotten in his hand. Holden walked up to the man's side, following his gaze to the ruined container. Prax pushed away from the nitrogen bath and joined them. There, clinging to the walls of glass that still stood, was a network of fine, black filament. Prax couldn't tell if it was an artificial polymer or a natural substance. Some kind of web. It had a fascinating structure, though. He reached out to touch it, and Holden grabbed his wrist, pulling him back so hard it hurt. When Holden spoke, his words were measured and calm, which only made the panic behind them more terrifying.
Naomi, prep the ship. We have to get off this moon. We have to do it right now.